It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here it is, Titanic Trumptanic Tuesday has arrived on this 24th day of November 2020, my 71st day without a cigarette. Yes. Yeah, how about that? I just figured because people do ask. So there we are. It's Titanic Tuesday, the day when we take note of manifestations of Titanic intellect of the sort that says, looks at an iceberg with a great big gigantic steamship and says, hey, let's see which one wins in a collision. Right. The name of Titanic Tuesday, of course, goes back well over a decade to a time when right-wing radio was still locally produced in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia. And in which the morning monotone, who is no longer with us, would read the newspaper to his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers every day and take the occasional phone call. You know the story. And at one point in time, he took a call from a caller who said, how come do you reckon there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I seen them when I was down in the coal mines. We ain't nowhere near the beach. To which the morning monotone replied, and what a pity he didn't, I guess he didn't live to see Trump become president. It would have been his fondest dream. But to which he replied, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Mm-hmm. Titanic plates. And so it gave us a theme for Tuesday. Still no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic Bananas Foster cart. No. But because of that moment of Titanic intellect, we pause to take note every Tuesday of manifestations of Titanic intellect among good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republicans. And you, of course, if you're listening live, or, you know, you're free to write in if you're listening to via the podcast. That's always welcome. But if you're listening live, you know, you're free to augment your listening experience by running over to headon.live and clicking on chat room and becoming part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. During the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Mm-hmm. And if you do jump into the chat room, you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jim Jam and House of Roberts and Natural 321 and Oregon Larry and Otto DeShot and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator of the Spacing Guild, has folded space to become Man Cave. He is capably assisted by his long-time companion, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Deacon Steve from Georgistan. Mm-hmm. Brother Deacon Steve having been promoted to deacon just last week. I felt like it was time. Yeah. And a good time is had by all in the room there each and every evening. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude because we don't have any advertising contracts and we don't have any shingles vaccines to pitch. Frank! No, we don't have that. What we have is the determination of a dedicated group of people who have formed a community over these past going on 2 decades who are absolutely committed to making sure that this commercial free radio continues to exist. And so our thanks go out to our 24th of the month PayPal subscribers. That would be Josh and Pamela in Washington. Thank you. And Samson, thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you, Jeremy, for getting us started. That means the fundraising goal for this evening is down to $275. Thank you, Jeremy, very kindly. I told you that there was a chance I might be late to the mic. It worked out nicely. I was not. I went to my oral surgery consult today, got home in an abundance of time, even had time to go to the grocery store where, yay, verily, after 2 years of searching, I finally found, and I think our buddy David in South Carolina, Stan, found these a long time before. But lo and behold, after searching for 2 freaking years, I finally found the Quaker Instant Ham and Red Eye Gravy Grits. So I had time to go to the grocery store. I picked up 4 boxes of those because that's just my breakfast thing. And they're really quite tasty. I don't even know if it's real ham, but it chews like it and it tastes like it and it's pretty darn good. So I got 4 boxes of those because as soon as I like something, grocery stores naturally stopped carrying it. I got Agnes some of the noodle bowls that she loves. And lo and behold, the really bougie name brand turkeys, fresh no less, were on sale at the grocery store for 99 cents a pound, so I got our turkey. And it's sitting on ice right now, and when the program's over, I will go out and begin the process of brining it. And, you know, seasoning it in the brine and everything. And then early Thursday morning, I will, I'm going to open a can of, an oil can of Foster's, drink half of it, or maybe pour a libation to the gods. I don't know. That seems a little early. But I will then prop up the turkey on said Foster's can and let the, get the fire started, the hickory smoke going, and we'll smoke that son of a gun all day Thursday, probably finish it in the roaster, and we'll have a lovely, wonderful tasting turkey. Tomorrow is also, tomorrow is the cornbread because I was too busy today. And so things are beginning to come together. Yeah. And all that taken together, yeah, I got to go to the oral surgeon today, and several of you asked about it. So I found out, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm going to be, at some point in time, it's Welcome to America, the land of capitalism. And it's going to be $5,000 worth of oral surgery. Oh, that's just great. Yeah, I know. Earther with a note, don't worry, Bob, he's watching Trump from below. As he's confronted by a titanic tectonic pineapple. Something like that. Okay. That's a good start. And, of course, also, to get us started, Bob Paul from Parts Unknown, continued challenge. Last night, Bob read Paul from Parts Unknown's excellent entry, into which Paul obviously put a lot of time and effort. I was moved by his expressions and intend to adhere to them as much as possible, considering my wife wants to invite her son and fiancé to turkey dinner from Parts Unknown here in Ohio. I'm saying that wrong. My apologies to Steve in New York. That's Ohio. Right. I've tried to explain to my wife that her wonderful son and fiancé are not immediate family and should not be coming to Thanksgiving Day dinner. Nicotine hiccups. I have to, time out. Yeah, that was rough. Still rough. It'll get better in a minute. Have to remember to keep some, I'm going to have to get a bottle of aromatic bitters and just keep a bowl of sliced lemon wedges around here for when these things hit. But anyway, Joey says, I've tried to explain to my wife that her wonderful son and fiancé are not immediate family and should not be coming to our Thanksgiving Day dinner. So I made a deal with her. If her son can come, then so can Jeffrey. If this turns out to be my last entry, you will know why. Paul from Parts Unknown is so prescient with his sage wisdom, and I feel indebted to him for taking the time to share and impart his critical and intellectual insight. Bob read a very long letter to the Horn community from Paul. Well, it was as long as it needed to be to convey the information. I didn't think it was over long at all. And having written over 100 Joey's journals by now, I'm acutely aware of how much time he must have given to all those pertinent points and cogent thoughts. My daily journals, on average, take me 2 hours to create after research, writing, and proofreading. Some of these journals have taken as much as 4 hours to construct. Ouch. So, cowbell for Paul from Parts Unknown for all of his thoughtful efforts to try to keep the Horn community safe this holiday season. In honor of Paul from Parts Unknown, I would like to make a generous donation with the help of the Horn community, which I will divulge after Monday and Tuesday's Joey's Journals. Monday's Joey's Journal. Friday night, Jeffrey's feelings were hurt when Bob said Jeffrey has the worst puns and then jug a punch after Jeffrey personally dropped off some Gojo goodies to his front porch, called Jeffrey a long-neck geek. Jeffrey stays up all night trying to come up with entertainment for the Horn family, and he's hypersensitive. H-I-G-H, persensitive, huh? Oh. Yeah. To all the criticism, I consider this animal abuse towards Jeffrey, and I'm going to call the game warden. Jeffrey says, don't waste your time calling the game warden, because they're probably too busy backed up on Trump casino violations. Game warden, good point, Giraffe. Funny, the punniest giraffe on planet Earth, and he's a member of our community. How about that? By the way, litigation is a legally sound word, and in legal parlance could be considered a word of art. Litigation, for those of you who are not on the porch Friday, was in response to G. Gordon Liddy's son's legal problems. Speaking of litigation, Giuliani walks into the Oval Office and informs Trump we have reached 250,000. Trump responds, COVID cases? Giuliani replies, no, Mr. President, that's the number of lawsuits we've attempted and failed and had dismissed for your re-election campaign efforts. Jeffrey and I had some fun Saturday night as we stumbled across some discarded Trump signs, so we decided to decorate them for the festive season. The best one was when I took the Trump sign and taped to the sign these words of art. The courts! Are you kidding? Not even the penal system can save the pussy grabber now. P-E-N-A, yeah. With the next sign saying, the courts are not courting Trump. Yeah, we put those signs on Fred and Barb's lawn after Ivy, my corky, took a shit on their property. I asked Ivy why she shat on the lawn, and she said, well, they still have their original Trump signs up. They seem to like shit. Fred's one of those obnoxious Republicans known to man as during the Tea Party days. He actually had a sign that read, keep your damn government hands off my Medicare. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey interjects. Did you happen to mention that I cleaned up the mess in attempts to practice proper environmental hygiene? Hygiene. Doop. Thank you for doing that, Jeffrey. And what's with all the morons that still have Trump signs planted in their front yard? Signs? Around here, they've got 6-foot banners, and they're not that by God taking them down because they really won. This reminds me of the Civil War, when 10 years after the war, half the country didn't know the war had ended. Hey, moron, maggots, the election's over. You lost. Now, grow up and take down your damn signs. You lost. It's over. Go home. And Jeffrey reacts with a thought. Actually, Joey, I'm not sure the Civil War has ended. It appears Trump has started the Civil War anew. Give that giraffe a cowbell. Reminds me of the late, great Rex Barney, former Major League pitcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers, who pitched in his first Major League game at the age of 18, but his career was cut short by injuries in World War II, where Barney received 2 Purple Hearts and Bronze Star. Barney eventually became the public address announcer for the Baltimore Orioles, and his signature call was when a fan made a great catch of a foul ball. Give that fan a contract! By the way, Rex Barney was a contemporary of Joe Nuxall, the youngest person ever to play in the majors at the age of 15. Nuxall played for the Reds and later became their radio play-by-play man. I used to listen to Joe Nuxall do Reds on radio for 35 years before he passed away in 2007. Another sign we placed on the lawn of one of the nicer neighborhoods, but also a moron. Instead of Trump Make America Great Again, Jeffrey cut the T from the one side and the P from the other. And the sign read as follows, Rum, Make America Great Again. Now, that was Joey's Journal for yesterday, the 23rd of November, with Giraffe rummaging through all the Trump lawsuits. Now, during the program last night, Joey says, go to HeadOn.live and please support the program. You actually forgot the name of the GSA administrator. Yes, Bob, you actually forgot the name Emily Murphy, even after Jeffrey came up with what that great pun of Murphy's Law. God, it's not so much that I try to forget these maggots' names. I don't ever want to remember them again unless I'm remembering them to bring a news story about how they're, you know, going to prison. Puns are good because they not only make you laugh, but help you remember names and places, too. At that point, Jeffrey just looked at the computer screen and said, if anything can go wrong, it will go wrong. Well, it appears that the transition transaction has been tendered, and that formality's foiled Trump's attempt at lawsuit larceny. What's that, Jeffrey? Jeffrey posits in his most sophisticated voice, yes, in Trump's latest book, The Art of the Steal, is now stalled. Yeah. So, back to Emily Murphy. As of last night, it appears the Murph has morphed. Yes, Emily Murphy has morphed from a maggot into a fly as she jumped off the sinking Trump-tanic and flown the coop. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, with some excellent words of art, says, don't you mean she's flown the attempted wait-for-it coup? Mm-hmm. Anti-Castro pigeons were heard drinking in bars, saying, coup, coup. Mm-hmm. Yes, Jeffrey's correct. The Murph has morphed and flown the attempted presidential coup by the Trumpistas. This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the 24th of November, with Giraffe flying high on Morph 1. And in honor of Paul from Parts Unknown, let's do a $100 challenge for Warnock and Ossoff. If we can raise $100 for the horn this evening, I'll give $100 to Warnock and Ossoff. And I hope to do 4 or 5 more of these types of challenges over the next 6 weeks. That would help the campaign, and that would help America. So there's a $100 challenge on the table. It's the In Honor of Paul from Parts Unknown challenge. It's the Save America with Ossoff and Warnock challenge. And that's a big deal. And if it's met, it'll go a long way toward knocking the fundraising goal down for this evening. Thank you, Joey. And thank you, Giraffe. Oh, let's see. Congratulations coming out to Steve from Georgia, Brother Deacon Steve from Georgistan, from Lee in New York. Is that worth a cowbell, Lee asks. Well, I think so, especially because, Brother Deacon Steve from Georgistan and the lovely Ms. Karen and little Cletus are still going through some tough times emotionally. So, most definitely. And, Steve in New York, oral surgery, I have a suggestion. Just see if you can skip a monthly Maybach payment until next month. Well, okay, maybe I'll get behind on the Maybach. But I can't skip the payment to Agnes's spleen, the attendant here at the mansion's spleen-shaped pool. No, can't. And we have a correction from Stephen, New York. The Ford Frick Award winner and Hall of Famer Marty Brenneman was the play-by-play guy. Nuxie was the sidekick who brought the Cincinnati-ness to the broadcast. Yeah, he was the color guy. God, I miss listening to those games, Steve says. I thought Joe was the color guy, but right. And what's that, James? If you're going to be making grits, hadn't you better wash the windows, the screens, and trim the shrubs? You never know what may go down on yonder hill. Back reference to my cousin Vinny. Well, I'm already committing heresy because they're instant grits anyway. They're going to pull my redneck card. So there's that. And, this, my brother-in-law and brother, have both have COVID-19, so we're not going to Muncie, for Thanksgiving. Chris and I have decided I'll go over to her blind, and she's making beer ribs with a barbecue sauce made with apple butter. Whoa. I asked Christine, sir, are you still making the ribs for Inauguration Day? She said, hell yes. Now, when she says this, I imagine she may even drag out the charcoal grill for the occasion. Sometimes my beloved ex-wife can be an optimist about the weather. Not Biden. She knows he's a good man. I'd like to wish the entire Horn Family Community Congregation, wherever they are in the world, to be safe, to know their loved ones, and be safe for their loved ones, and have a beautiful beginning to the holiday season. Signed, your buddy Dave in the blind. By the way, I'll tell Chris you said hi. Do please. Thank you. Barbecue sauce made with apple butter? I may have to think about that a little bit. Maybe apple butter, a little cider vinegar, some mustard. Ooh, and those lovely apple butter spices. Not a big fan of a whole lot of cinnamon in apple butter. I like mine with cloves and ginger and stuff like that, but, well, yeah. And Steve pointing out, yeah, Marty and Joe, goddamn it, them was good times. Yeah, they were. They were. Great play-by-play pair. And news coming from Randy Radar, Pennsylvania officially certified its 20 electoral votes for Biden today. Randy says, I'm laughing my ass off. That was a giraffe-worthy pun. Randy, it really, really was. And so here we are, well on our way into this here Titanic Tuesday. And Agnes brought something to my attention earlier. Get the hockey puck. No, really. And get the good Gorilla brand duct tape, too, because you want to make sure that you don't, because otherwise you're liable to shoot the hockey puck right across the room. And unless you got a hockey net on the other end of the room, it's not going to end well. You remember Randy Quaid, right? You remember National Lampoon's Vacation and Vegas Vacation, and right? Well, I didn't know it, but apparently Randy Quaid is a big maggot. And Randy Quaid loves him some Trump. And so since this is radio, you'll only have the audio to but you're going to have to do the whole theater of the mind thing. And imagine a Randy Quaid, you know, with a big old beard, probably has old soup and stuff in it and whatnot. And he's right up on top of the camera so that all you can see is it's from his forehead down to his beard in the middle of his face. And, Nitwit Nero retweeted him several times in the last 24 hours. Not quite sure what it is that recommends Randy Quaid as an expert on elections or anything. I mean, I think there were some legal troubles a few years back, but no. Now that I've given you enough time, this. I mean, and we thought John Voight was nuts. Well, at least Randy doesn't live too terribly close to Tracy, so John Voight does, but Randy Quaid, media expert as well.
Fox News daytime ratings have completely collapsed. Weekend daytime, even worse. Very sad to watch this happen. But they forgot the way...
That was gross.
Yeah. They forgot what made them successful. What got them there. They forgot the golden goose. The only difference between the 2016 election and 2020 is Fox News.
Yep. Yeah. You think we could get maybe a wellness check over to the Quaid domicile? I don't think Randy's okay. Yeah, Flavio says, you beat me to it, Randy Quaid. Holy... Flavio asking, the fuck is Randy Quaid? Looks like that guy from Duck Dynasty. No, it's worse. He looks like one of the little gnomes from... Agnes, what was that fantasy movie? You in there? No? There was some creepy little gnome in a... I don't know if it was Legend or... beats the hell out of me. He's reading a tweet from Nitwit Nero, and Nitwit Nero retweeted him reading a tweet. It's kind of like a Hall of Mirrors effect, only with stupidity. Yeah, President retweeted a series of bizarre videos and messages by Randy Quaid, including one where the actor alleged voter fraud and another in which he attacked Fox News. The first video Trump retweeted Tuesday was a video Quaid originally posted more than a year ago. And that was this one.
Is this the way America goes? From George Washington to George Soros? From oceans white with foam to a socialist swamp? Is this the way America goes? Is this really our future? Wake up, you sleeping giant. The Lilliputians have tied you down with their fantastic dreams of icebergs melting into dinosaurs and train tracks stretching across the Pacific waters.
Huh? What, Edith, huh? But hey, look at that. We got an iceberg reference on Titanic Tuesday. That doesn't just happen every day.
Trump trumpets reveille, and it's time to heed the call. The framers have been framed. The people disarmed. Conservative voices are silenced in the schools by anarchists left unmasked. Merry Christmas is greeted cheerlessly, even condemned. Is this how America goes? To a nation of godless fanatics?
Can you imagine being so unhinged, so deranged, so intellectually labile, that you actually think that the election of a centrist Democrat is going to result in socialism? I mean, this piece of video garbage is from October 12th, 2019. And COVID for Brains retweeted it in the last 24 hours. Oh, there's a lot of not okay going on. Yeah, it was funny. He popped out of his spider hole, COVID Caligula did today, to brag about the stock market crossing the 30,000 mark. Now, we could do what everybody else does and say, you know, the stock market is not representative of America's financial or economic wellness as a whole, and that's absolutely true. That there are millions, tens of millions of Americans who have absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the stock market, that you can tell a lot more about the well-being of America via the number of people who don't have jobs, the number of people looking for jobs, than anything that happens on the sacred market. But he was no sooner out there than the reporters started hollering questions about when he's going to concede. And so he didn't last but about a minute, really. And then he shuffled and galumphed and made his way out of the White House press briefing room, never realizing, because it hit 30,000 yesterday, the market did. But the thing is, it hit the 30,000 mark on news that Joe Biden's transition was finally going to proceed. In other words, the market hit 30,000 on the news that Donald Trump is going to stop being president in some 57 days or so. It was the market celebrating the end of the Trump disaster. Maybe beginning to turn a corner and get a handle on this disease that's been ignored since probably this time last year. Remember, we have now passed the one-year mark because we sorted it out. It was somewhere between the 16th and the 19th of November that the Medical Intelligence Unit of the DIA first briefed the White House on a virus being out of control in China. They briefed the White House, they briefed the Pentagon, and then the United States briefed Israel. There's a chain. We can see it. And for some reason or another, that remains the most underreported story of 2020. Remember, it showed up as a question that George Snuffleupagus asked on This Week with George Snuffleupagus. And the maggot he asked it to went, "What?" And then the next day, there was a news story about it. And a week or so later, there was a news story about the Israelis being briefed. And it just went poof. And of course, November the 19th was also the day of the mysterious motorcade trip to Walter Reed, for which there has never been anything remotely resembling a satisfactory explanation. So the market is celebrating the impending end of this second reign of error in 20 years. In the last 20 years, we have had 12 years that were reign of error. And there we are. With regard to the ravings of Randy Quaid, Steve in New York said, "Now hold on there, George Soros wasn't on my ballot." Randy Quaid asks Arthur, "Trump, stop the reactor." Total Recall reference. Well played. I think that may be our first Total Recall reference. That was Randy Quaid, Steve asks. And to think his brother is Dennis and his nephew, Jack Quaid, played in the first Hunger Games movie. Sometimes Randy Quaid is not screwed down, you know, too particularly tight.
In the shadows of big tech and empty condos, homeless citizens fill the streets, wallowing in their own filth, while big pharma sedates us with opiates, the food industry poisons our insides, and business organizations kowtow to communist marching orders.
All of that, but he doesn't notice that, lo and behold, ha, how about that? the maggots were hollowing out the lizard brains of all the trumpansies in Merca. Yeah. I mean, this is a hell of a soliloquy. I mean, if you go in for stark, raving, crazy soliloquies.
Is this the way America goes? In a stupor of ignorance? In obedience to corruption and greed? Ring out, you bells of freedom! Sound the alarm across the land!
Do you think he chose a room with all those native reverb in it? Or was that just an accident and that was the only place in the home where he could go and blather into a camera?
Oh, glory is being ripped to shreds by fakers and phonies and bullies and liars.
Huh. Nothing in there about old glory being desecrated by the Blue Lives Matter people who run around with a desecrated version of the American flag. Nope, nothing there.
Whew.
Yeah, that's some restaurant quality nuts. That's what that is. Hey, thank you to James in Illinois, getting us going on Joey's challenge in honor of Paul from Parts Unknown. $90 to go now. Thank you. And Steve in New York says, I'd offered this previously, but it never was filled, so I'm going to offer it again. It's the chocolate-covered potato chip challenge, milk and dark. Two dark, two milk, or one of each. Or soft caramels covered in dark or milk chocolate and sprinkled with sea salt. A brand new subscriber this evening, if we can get a new subscriber, gets two 10-ounce boxes of the chocolates, whether that's two dark, two milk, or one of each, or two boxes of chocolate-covered potato chips, milk and dark, same combination, two dark, two milk, one of each. And that's all for a $25 contribution or a $10 new subscriber. So that's on the table, courtesy of Steve. And we'll see what happens. If you want to just kick in 25 bucks, Steve will handle that. Send me your address when you do. Or a $10 new subscriber. And it'll actually be tripled because there'll be, not tripled, but Steve will send you your premium. And then our buddy Zed will double your first month's contribution. That's pretty cool too. Oh, note from Darlene in Connecticut. Jeffrey may now have a soulmate in high places, as today, during his acceptance speech for the nomination of Secretary of State, Antony Blinken apologized ahead of time to all those he comes in contact with as having to put up with his constant bad puns. Oh, no. So don't Blinken, Jeffrey, lest you miss an opportunity to give Antony a few tips. And maybe you should also request a soiree with the rescue mayor to give him a few pointers on how to rise his German shepherd head high above the insanity once he starts romping about the White House lawn. I hope Jeffrey enjoys his seat at the dinner table this Thursday. P.S. Some legal troubles a few years ago. Randy Quaid is a Looney Tune. Dude is mentally ill. Not kidding. He's mentally ill and needs help. He's needed help for a long time. I was trying to be as gentle as I possibly could, Darlene, but you are absolutely right. Quaid Lewd. Ooh. Oh, God. It's a pun night, isn't it? Quaid Lewd. That from James in Illinois. Want to bet he got a payday out of this one? P.S. He's talking into a coffee can in the bathroom. You know what? I need a coffee can here to turn. That could be because I don't have a reverb button on this little mix desk anymore. That could. We're gonna have to get a metal coffee can. They're mostly plastic now. Need a metal one. And Flavio says, are you enjoying the Georgia Republican circular firing squad? Don't know about you, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I had no idea Brian Kemp was a godless Rosicrucian socialist fascist. Right. No. And what Flavio is alluding to is Brian Kemp has given his last fuck. His bag of fucks is empty. He has no more to give. Because, now remember, this is the Republican governor of Georgia, who before that was the Republican secretary of state of Georgia, who only became governor because of the number of African, primarily African-American votes that he suppressed so that they wouldn't be able to vote for, you know, Stacey Abrams. Over at the COVID Caligula elite strike force, they have claimed of late that Brian Kemp, yes, African-American vote-suppressing Brian Kemp was part of the vast conspiracy that gave the election to Joe Biden. QAnon Goonie and recently canned Trump lawyer Sidney Powell gave an interview to Newsmax where she said, Georgia's probably going to be the first state I'm going to blow up. We don't know who bought their election. I'm sure it crosses party lines. And that's when they took her out of the elite strike force. And Brian Kemp, well, he said, these are ridiculous. They only seek to breed fear, create confusion, and sow discord amongst our citizens. Now more than ever, we must stand up for the truth, and we need to unite behind around our shared values. We must ignore those who want to divide us and find a way to overcome the challenges that we all face together. I'm committed to doing that. Yeah. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. This is a classic case of, come on, let's you and them fight. If the Republican Party completely tears itself to pieces, that'll be fine by me. Maybe they can shatter into several small regional parties, none of whom will ever be able to win an election. That'd be fine by me, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, Randy Radar reminds us. Anthony Blinken has appointed two assistants. Their last names are Winken and Nod. That had to happen sooner or later. Because the universe itself couldn't stand not to have that pun made before the evening was out. Yeah. And by the way, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Trump finally conceded. No, he didn't. He did not concede. Still today, he was babbling about, we're going to have the best victory, the litigation ever in America. Kicking and screaming. That's how we're going to have to remove him from the White House. And I don't know about you, but I, for one, am down for watching that. We could probably have a watch party. What do you think? It's that kind of a Titanic Tuesday. It really is. Oh, and there was a mention early in the program of opioids and Appalachia and the like. Brother Deacon Asa brought to my attention a little piece of news from earlier today. On the one hand, you'd like to think of it as... wait a minute. Speaking of Brother Deacon Asa, he says... urethra! Randy Quaid, that's Q-U-A-I-D, is Q. Dear God. That makes more sense than anything else. Oh, and I stand corrected. Oh, actually, I'm sitting. Brother Deacon Asa, the unofficial historian of all things Horn broadcast. You're wrong about the morning monotone not living to see Trump become president. He embarked on his journey on December 27th, 2018. I had no idea. Thank you. Thank you for that little bit of information. Much appreciated. But Purdue Pharma, the people, the company, as or more responsible for the opioid crisis in America than any other, had a day in court today. Because Purdue Pharma, via its board chair, Steve Miller, there's too many of those. Let's just stop with Bingo Jed had a light on. And no more Steve, because the Steve Miller in the White House, this Steve Miller at Purdue Pharma. Well, he showed up and he entered a bunch of guilty pleas in federal court. Three. They admitted that they hadn't done much of anything to make sure that prescription drugs didn't get shifted over onto the black market. On the other hand, they lied to the DEA and said, oh yeah, we got a program to keep that from happening, don't we? Yeah, we definitely got a program. And then it outright lied and misled the DEA so that they could run up their manufacturing quotas. They pled guilty to paying doctors in a sham speakers program so that they would write more opioid prescriptions. And they also pled guilty to paying a medical records company that handled records electronically. They paid this company to send data on patients to various doctors, encouraging the doctors to write opioid scripts for those patients. And so the thing is, this guilty plea, it affects no human being inside Purdue Pharma. Not one. No. Nobody's going to jail. Nobody's going to put on a blindfold and get a cigarette and stand against a brick wall. Nobody's climbing the steps up any gallows or getting into a not particularly comfortable chair with a lot of wires attached to it or climbing up on the horizontal crucifixion table. Not a single person from Purdue Pharma is going to be punished for the God alone knows how many deaths and how many lives otherwise ruined for nothing more than money. That's all. Oh, but Purdue Pharma is going to pay $8.3 billion in penalties and forfeitures. Sorta. But the way the deal is structured, because remember who's, remember whose Justice Department we're talking about here. On paper, it says $8.3 billion in penalties and forfeitures, but when it comes to actually writing a check, it's only going to be for $225 million. Now, along with the $225 million cash, if they want that lower number, they have to sign on the dotted line for a settlement agreement that's going in through the federal bankruptcy system with state and local governments that are suing it because of what Purdue Pharma did to their to the states, to the counties, the municipalities. by letting opioids run wild in their communities. Now, the Sackler family actually owns Purdue Pharma. This is not some corporation with common stock and it traded on the New York Stock Exchange or no, NASDAQ or no. No, this is the thing. This is the play toy of the Sacklers. They got richer and richer and richer watching people in small town America get sicker and sicker and more addicted and then die and overdose. And when they couldn't get their pills anymore, they transitioned to heroin that turned out to have fentanyl in it. And little towns like Huntington, West Virginia found themselves responding to 45 overdoses in one afternoon because a particularly hot batch came in loaded up with bathtub fentanyl from China. So there won't be any nooses going around the necks of any Sacklers. No. Hell, no Sacklers will even see the inside of a prison. Now, on the other hand, if you get caught with a little plastic baggie full of hydrocodones or OxyContins or whatever, yeah, if your hillbilly ass gets caught with that, you're going to do hard time, long time. But not the Sacklers. Not the people that have that formed one of the what did we describe it the other talk about it the other day, that there were a series of two events that it was like bang, you know, sucker punch, and then COVID. You know, old Balls and Strikes Roberts striking down the Medicaid expansion, and then comes the opioid epidemic. And by that time, American hospitals were, especially rural hospitals, were on their knees. When the opioid epidemic hits and there's not enough beds for rehab and recovery. Meanwhile, the Sacklers just sail around on their yachts or live in their vacation homes and... Well, dearest, I wonder what the little addicts are doing tonight. Yeah, but no, this deal hits them where they hurt, because the Sacklers have to write a $225 million check to the federal government, too. That's for civil claims. Not a single criminal charge has been filed against a single member of the Sackler family. And this is why, the shorthand for it is, this is why we can't have nice things. This is how we come to understand that we have a multi-tiered so-called criminal justice system. You can kill millions as long as you're a billionaire. And not even be remotely inconvenienced. $225 million, really? What's that going to mean to the Sacklers? They probably make that, what, in an hour, a day, a week, a month? It's certainly not as much as a year. Rubbing salt into the needle wound, Purdue Pharma said, having our plea accepted in federal court and taking responsibility for past misconduct is an essential step to preserve billions of dollars of value for the settlement. No. You know, I think this country needs to see corporate malefactors headed to bad federal prisons. I'm not talking about, you know, the little country club in California where we sent Don Blankenswine. I mean, Supermax in, say, Florence, Colorado. Let a Sackler spend the rest of their life maybe two cells down from the Unabomber and the Blind Sheik. Let a corporate officer have the next cell over from them. Because, you know, our betters are forever telling us that we need harsher criminal penalties because it serves as a deterrent. The death penalty assholes, for instance, are always saying things like, well, you know, we need the death penalty because that reduces the likelihood of murder. It serves as a deterrent to murder, even though there's not a single statistic that points in that direction. So why don't we say the same about corporations? Why can we not simply go in, shut down Purdue Pharma, transfer all of their material assets to other companies, and take every penny they've got from them as a form of punishment, and then make sure there is not a Purdue Pharma again ever? You know, whereas the death penalty does not appear to slow down murder in this country, I come back to my theory that a corporate death penalty damned well might impose a little bit more responsibility among our betters. Yeah. And so just in terms of numbers, that $225 million from Purdue Pharma and the $225 million civil settlement from the Sackler family, well, 470,000 Americans overdosed and died in the last 20 years as a result of opioids. And the ones who survived, if they're trying or have tried to kick it, have an everyday struggle that will never end for the rest of their days. Cynthia Munger was interviewed by the Associated Press for this article. She's a mother, and her son is trying to recover from opioid addiction. Over 10 years ago, he hurt his shoulder playing high school baseball. And the doc prescribed OxyContin. And he got hooked and will struggle for the rest of his days. Ms. Munger of Wayne, Pennsylvania, told the Associated Press, "Until we start charging these corporate officials with crimes and punishing them for them, and we stop accusing brick and mortar and not individuals, nothing will change." Half of the attorneys general in the United States opposed the federal settlement, as well as the bankruptcy settlement. One of those people opposing the settlement is probably not Pill Push and Patty Morrissey, who, before becoming the Attorney General of West Virginia, was a pusher for the pharmaceutical industry. Cardinal Health. They were one of those middlemen. No, I'm sure he doesn't oppose it. So, among the things that came out in the course of the litigation, back in 2008, there was an email and that email was from a company called McKinsey and Corp. Purdue Pharma hired them to boost sales of opioids. A year after the first guilty plea to opioid-related crimes by Purdue Pharma, that email from McKinsey and Corp said that they were blessed by the company to do whatever they thought was necessary to save the business. The Sacklers were hands-on in all of this. A mid-level employee said, the brothers who started the company viewed all employees like the guys who trimmed the hedges. Employees should do exactly what's asked of them and not say too much. And then in 2013, they tried to supercharge opioid sales because the opioid crisis was hurting the bottom line at Purdue Pharma. Line them up! You want a final cigarette? No, those things will kill you. And these things have real-world consequences that reverberate inside our own community. Jeremy in Vermont writes, my sister died at 36 after a relapse into heroin, mostly because it was cheaper than the opioids she had become addicted to in her teens. She'd been clean for 6 years. Fuck all these dirty bastards. Line them up. Line them up. What harm, rhetorically speaking, would come to our country if we excised murderous psychopaths from our society? You know, the other night, I think it was Friday, I mentioned COVID blazing through the Yanomami population in Brazil on their reservation there. And I talked about Napoleon Chagnon, who first documented the Yanomami. And he came up with this theory that violence is inherent in the human species. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at hunter-gatherer societies, you find that they deal with problems in their populations a lot more differently than do civilized, developed, sedentary cultures like ours. Sedentary agricultural societies, you know, what became the norm some 7,000 or so years ago. They tend to be more successful at getting better behavior among their cultural groups, be they clan, tribal, what have you. And they don't tend to have these sorts of problems. Because, among other things, If you behave badly enough, they'll just run you out of the group. And that's when we find out that all of this libertarian nonsense about lone wolves and lifting yourself up by your own bootstraps is so much bullshit. Even in developed societies, advanced societies, when the Romans really wanted to punish your ass, they exiled you from Rome and forbade you water and fire within X distance of the city. For instance, you might have to go to Athens or what would later become Marseille in France. And you couldn't come home. And that was said to be effective. But nobody's even going to spit on a member of the Sackler family. Or any of these godforsaken corporate psychopaths who have the blood of 470,000 people on their hands. And that is evidence, that is a form of proof, not of our civilization, but of our lack of it. Shorty in L.A. responding to all of this, settlement. Sounds to me like Purdue Pharma got the same deal that Time Warner Cable Channel did, hence the Spectrum cable deal. Yeah, that's right, Horn family. If you have Spectrum, that's the deal that you got until that settlement money runs out, and that's going to be real soon. So to all of you Spectrum people, start your savings account now. I'm not joking, sweetie pies. Time Warner Cable, who do so many people that they could not afford to pay out all the money without going bankrupt, so to make up for that, they had to create Spectrum. So the restitution was the customers get a deal at a very low cost all across America to pay off their debt. To me, that was freaking stupid. It should be free because they're still bringing in money. Where's the iceberg now? So pretty soon they'll have paid off their debt and they can begin screwing people all over again. This is what Purdue Pharma has to look forward for. A giant party when the debt is paid. Yeah, these kind of scams happen all the time. Here in West Virginia, several years ago now, a coal company was on the way to going belly up. So they took their good assets and set them aside in one company. And then they created another company called Patriot, where they put all of their bad, toxic, about-to-fail assets, including union pensions. And then, lo and behold, Patriot declared bankruptcy, and the pensions went bye-bye. How about that? You know, there are things that badly need to be addressed in this country. And the list over the course of the last 4 years has simply grown longer and longer and longer. You remember when we got bankruptcy reform sometime around 2004? Remember the bankruptcy reform during the Bush reign of error that suddenly turned unsecured creditors like credit card companies into secured creditors so that you couldn't actually declare bankruptcy and get free of credit card debt? That all needs fixed. And it needs fixed yesterday. And that goes back to what I've said over and over and over again about we need to be clear-eyed going forward as we leave Nitwit Nero to history. What lies before us is not the work of a presidential term. It's not the work of two presidential terms. It is the work of a generation. And we need to damned well pay attention that it's not just presidencies, that it's the Congress. And so we find ourselves coming back to January the 5th and the special runoff elections between Raphael Warnock and Kelly Attila the Hun Leffler and John Ossoff and David Debate Chicken Purdue. We must have the Senate. We must have it if we are to begin correcting the mistakes of the horrors, not just of the past four, but of the past 20, or nay, even the past 40, going all the way back to January the 20th, 1981, when that greasy-headed old B-movie actor took the oath of office. You know, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Yeah. And that's what makes January the 5th so damned important. And that's what makes the midterm elections of 2022 so damned important. And that's what makes figuring out what really happened in the election so damned important. With every passing day, I feel a little more confident that there really were shenanigans, but it was not on our part. Again, what I mentioned last night. Anything they complain of, it's pure projection. They've either already done it, or they're gonna do it. And I think in this case, all the stuff they're complaining of is skullduggery that they got up to. Yeah, I know. Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. And so we thank you, Charlene, in Rogues Island. We are now $60 from finishing Joey's challenge in honor of Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you to Joey and Jeffrey, and thank you, Charlene, and thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, James, in Illinois. Thank you all very kindly. Kenneth, with a note. Not to get too philosophical here, but I've come to an epiphany when it comes to Trump. It seems obvious and hardly worth saying, but it must be said. In life, we can make things overly complicated and difficult or not, but why we are in this mess after 4 years seems pretty straightforward to me. Donald Trump is a psychopath. Period. End of story. To me, it's no different than letting the fox into the hen house. It's not going to turn out well for the hens. That's who he is and always has been. He couldn't change if he wanted to, and he doesn't want to. There's no 3 a.m. come to Jesus moment. There's no Christmas Carol redemption arc. Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, John Wayne Gacy all had psychopath ingrained in their DNA, and so does Trump. When Hillary lost, sorta, and he was released into the White House, we all became victims of this evil fuck. Simple as that. Fuck him, and I cannot wait until January 20th. Thanks as always, and happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Kenneth. Stay safe, please. We all know kind of what the rules are. We talked about that last night. Are we all just going to sit around and mope because we're not going to be treated to the political opinions of crazy old Uncle Fox News and crazy old Auntie Limbaugh listener? Not me. Not me. And then there's the, I think Kenneth's right. I think he's a psychopath, but I also think he is badly intellectually disabled. That's the we worked hard on that over the course of the last few years. And I think that's the term you use that we used to use to describe by saying that someone was mentally and that hateful R word. That means slow. He is congenitally, intellectually damaged and disabled. And when you mix that in with psychopath, you get a real live, honest to goodness, no kidding, hot mess. So, you know, we can agree. He's a psychopath and a, yeah. Sumon, meanwhile, says, the word ignorance is not enough, and sends us a tweet from Precious Princess I-Wank-a-Ma-Daddy Trump Kushner.
Fact, greenhouse gases generated by the U.S. will slide 9.2% this year, tumbling to the lowest level in at least 3 decades at EPA.
Sumon writes,
shh, don't tell her that this is because millions of people stopped traveling and the 250,000 people will never travel again.
I guess all those dead people are creating a great big silver lining in the sky, according to this dipshit. The word ignorance is not enough for these jackasses. No, no, it's not. And I'll bet they spent a fortune on her education. It just didn't happen to buy them much. Maybe she didn't go to class. Who knows? Oh, and the numbers on Purdue Pharma. Brother Deacon Asa crunched a few. $225 million is 27 days worth of Purdue sales. or 11 hours of Amazon sales. 27 days. You know, the word punitive has the same root as our word punish, and there's a reason for that. Punitive damages are meant to punish, as are criminal penalties. They are meant to punish the wrongdoer. Taking away 27 days of sales out of any given 365-day year does not, I suspect, constitute anything resembling punishment for Purdue Pharma or for the Sacklers. Hell, even as you and I talk, somewhere some Sacklers are probably sitting around giggling.
Oh, God, didn't you love it? Yeah, $225 million. Shit.
We spend that on lobster and caviar. And we made him think it was actually going to hurt, and we felt bad about the $225 million. Suckers! Yeah. So one of these days, maybe, just maybe, we'll get serious about bringing these corporate thugs to heel. Oh, and thank you very kindly. We are now $50. We're halfway to, being done with Joey and Giraffe's challenge in honor of Paul from Parts Unknown. Another $50 and we're done. And theoretically, that would mean that after that, we only got $75 to go to stay even with this evening. So $125 and we're done. That's awesome. We're nearing the halfway point of the program. And with that in mind, since we seem to be focusing on this Titanic Tuesday on corporate malfeasance, well, from Big Pharma, let's go to Big Chicken. Okay, it's Big Meat. Talking about Tyson Foods. You remember early in the pandemic how COVID-19, we were horrified to find out that it was just raging through places like meat processing plants? Well, we have a story out of Iowa of corporate bad acting that, again, just as Kenneth was talking about, it goes past simple criminal malfeasance and begins to work up the the DSM-5 ladder toward sociopathy and psychopathy. Sociopaths and sociopaths. At one point in time, over 1,000 people, 1,000 workers at the Tyson Foods facility in Waterloo, Iowa, that's over a third of the workforce there, over 1,000 employees there tested positive for the coronavirus. And it got so bad that it eventually forced the meat processing plant to shut down. Out of those who got the virus, at least 5, we don't know the full, the complete number, at least 5 died. Who knows how many will have long-term consequences, because one of the things we're finding out more and more is that there are long-term consequences even when you recover from this nightmare. You may recall another meatpacking plant where they offered bonuses for continuing to come to work to the point that one individual died for her paycheck. Well, lawsuits are now being filed. Isidro Fernandez died of COVID-19 on April the 26th. And survivors, members, grieving members of the Fernandez family have filed suit against Tyson. And they have alleged willful and wanton disregard for workplace safety. Among other allegations in the suit papers, despite an uncontrolled COVID-19 outbreak, Tyson required its employees to work long hours in cramped conditions. Moreover, despite the danger of COVID-19, Tyson failed to provide adequate personal protective equipment and failed to implement sufficient social distancing or safety measures to protect workers from the outbreak. The suit was originally filed in August. The Washington Post reports that an amended complaint with new and further allegations was filed 13 days ago on the 11th. Enter the Iowa Capital Dispatch publication, who dug around to find out what was really going on as COVID was blazing through that Waterloo plant. Sick bastards. Well, among other things, John Casey, who is an upper-level manager at the plant in Waterloo, according to the allegations, made express orders to plant supervisors to ignore any symptoms of COVID-19 that they might become aware of. He told the supervisors to show up. You come to work, even if you've got symptoms. John Casey, and I bet I know how he votes. John Casey told employees of that Waterloo plant that COVID-19 is a glorified flu. He told workers, it's no big deal. He said, everybody's going to get it. One individual, a supervisor, was on their way to get tested. Casey saw them and sent them back to work and said, we all have symptoms. You have a job to do. At another point in time, this really is rough on dinner in all the time zones and snacks and whatever else. At one point in time, a worker at the plant vomited on the production line. The supervisor said, keep working, and let the worker come back the next day. But eventually, the managers figured out that this wasn't a glorified flu. And so they themselves began staying well the hell away from the production floor, because they didn't want to get the virus. And they began just delegating authority to people who had no idea how to exercise it. Among other things, there were no temperature checks for truck drivers or subcontractors before they entered the plant. And in March, plant supervisors outright lied. Said, we don't have any confirmed cases or positive tests. And yeah, it was Tyson who paid out $500 thank you bonuses if you showed up for work for every scheduled shift for 3 months. And so it kept sick people showing up and spreading the disease. But the lawyers were busy, and the executives were busy. They were working overtime, too. Only in this case, they were working overtime by beating on the door of the governor of Iowa, Kim Reynolds, and told her they wanted to be protected against any lawsuits against them if anybody happened to get sick or get sick and die from the Rona. Eventually, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, and we know how she votes, did in fact make a ruling, an executive order, only state government and not local governments could close a business as a result of the pandemic. And then, of course, they didn't close the plants. And then, according to the suit papers, the managers at Tyson turned the risk into a game. That's a quote, into a game. How did they do that? The United Farm Workers reported they began gambling. They were placing bets on how many workers at that Tyson plant in Waterloo, Iowa, would be made would get sick from COVID-19. They gambled on the very lives of human beings, the very lives of the workers. Yeah. Really. Hey, I bet it's gonna be 37 today. Nah, I got a Benjamin says it's gonna be 52. Well, do they have to die? No, I'll just get sick. Hey, what do you want to bet? Somebody pukes on a big bunch of chickens tomorrow. Well, I'll take that bet. Yeah. Private supervisors privately wagered money on the number of workers who would be sickened. Really? Once again, no accountability. Is there even a criminal statute that would cover gambling on the lives of people you were deliberately subjecting to a deadly virus? Our buddy Randy tells me that our friend Rick Smith, who is the single best labor broadcaster in the country, Rick Smith came up with a hashtag, bare naked capitalism. And Randy points out, I bet those Tyson managers are Christians. Well, I'm sure they are. And pointing out the operative phrase, depraved heart. Depraved heart. I'd say that fits the definition. More than. And look, this is just, this isn't an aberration. This is capitalism running as capitalism is intended to run. When you hear some soulless, godless, motherless Republican talking about how we got to let the free market be and let it, we got to let the free market run itself or else, you know, we'll kill jobs. We got to have us laissez-faire capitalism. When they do that, what they're saying is they think it's okay
for the executive class to gamble on how many workers will die. Of a disease that they did nothing to prevent spreading all over their plant, and in fact did things to make the disease spread further and faster. Tell me, when you think about the things for which we punish ordinary folk, what should the punishment be for being of such a depraved heart that you get pleasure, you get joy, you get a giggle out of watching people get sick and die? What should the punishment be? Never mind what I think, what do you think? And, of course, now at the halfway point of the program, I can point out that, or should have pointed out earlier, just a general reminder, if you'd like to talk about all this, if you've got some particular take on it that I haven't gotten to, and you'd rather say it yourself than have me read it in an email, well, dial up. I don't mean dial up. Call. Dial doesn't even have any real relevance anymore in telephony. But you can reach me through Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or 304-574-8178. Or from anywhere in North America, far Canada, Mexico, anywhere in the U.S., 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. Is this country capable of ever asking, demanding that its wealth class behave like civilized human beings instead of well-moneyed psychopaths? The problem being, of course, that money is the grease of government. And there are all too many members of that government, our government, who are filthy rich and want the same protections for themselves. They feel a kinship with the people who laugh and chortle and guffaw and wager on which member of the Fernandez family will get sick and die. Evil. Evil. Bastards. Did you know? Did you know that there is still just slightly less than $500 million in CARES Act money that hasn't been spent? Yeah, it's just laying there. Well, it was. It was until Treasury Secretary and producer of movies I refuse to ever see, Steve Mnuchin, decided to squirrel that $455 billion away into a Treasury account that any successor Treasury Secretary will not be able to use on a discretionary basis. There's $455 billion that could be sent out in checks to support struggling families and stimulate the economy. It could have been done anytime. But now it's in an account that the next Treasury Secretary will not be able to access without the consent of Congress, and that includes the Senate of the United States. So for all intents and purposes, Steve Mnuchin has put Mitch McConnell in charge of $455 billion that was supposed to be used to help people through this pandemic. Via Bloomberg News, and thanks to our buddy Joy in Ann Arbor for sending this to me. Via Bloomberg News, they report, the fund into which the money has been placed can only be tapped with, quote, authority based on congressionally issued legislation. That means Congress has to actually pass a bill, and that is something that, by God, Mitch McConnell is not gonna do. These murderous, homicidal maniacs would rather watch people starve or freeze or both and die before they'll turn loose of that money. Because that money can be used for something good, like Republican cronies, Senate Republican cronies, to be precise. And so there we are. There we are again at January the 5th and the special runoff elections between John Ossoff and David Debate Chicken Perdue and Raphael Warnock and Kelly Attila the Hun. My hubby runs the New York Stock Exchange. I'm the richest member of the entire Congress, Loeffler. This is why it matters. Take power away from the dictator who is running this country. We've talked about the ineptitude of Donald Trump, but don't anybody ever think that there's anything even remotely inept about Mitch McConnell. And do not kid yourself. The man running this country into the ground right now is Mitch McConnell. The worst, by orders of magnitude, human being ever to come out of Sheffield, Alabama, and George Wallace included, possibly Alabama at all. And that says a lot. Hell, I don't think Charlie Manson was as evil as Mitch McConnell is. I saw, again, I think this was via our friend Joy, saw a photo today. It just simply showed a headstone in a cemetery that read Trump, with a sign by it that says, please wash hands after urinating. We probably need to put one of those, when the day comes, we need to put one of those signs next to Mitch's stone, too. And so we've crossed the halfway point of the program this evening. We've got $50 to go to finish Joey and Giraffe's challenge in honor of Paul from Parts Unknown, which will also result in $100 going to the Ossoff and Warnock campaigns, 50 apiece. And after that, we've got another... is 75 to go to finish the evening entirely. Hopefully that will happen before the program is out. My little radical cashectomy today, Oh, and by the way, another aspect or another institution within our government that has failed, depending on how you define these things,
This is the case of Anna Suda and Martha Mimi Hernandez. They're U.S. citizens, Anna and Martha Mimi. But because they have names that aren't Smith and Jones, they were rounded up by the Border Patrol in Montana. Because in Havre, I don't know, Havre, who knows? Who knows how we redneck it up? Havre, Montana. Anna and Mimi were speaking Spanish to one another at a gas station called Town Pump in that town in Montana. And the Border Patrol swooped down on them because they had profiled them. Agent Paul O'Neill walked up to the women, commented on Ms. Hernandez's accent, and asked them where they were born. One answered Texas, the other answered California. Then the Border Patrol fascist pig demanded that they show identification. And they each hauled out their Montana driver's licenses. Still, they were detained in the parking lot of the gas station. So they started videoing manly, studly Agent O'Neill and asked him why they targeted them. And he said, well, y'all were speaking Spanish in a state where it's predominantly English-speaking, and that's it. And so, represented by the ACLU, they have pursued their rights against the Department of Homeland Security and the Border Patrol. And they're going to get a payday. They're going to be paid for what was done to them, these American citizens. And it's not the first event to happen in Havre, Montana. I know what it is in French, but I'm pretty sure it's not that in Montana. In 2006, Customs and Border Patrol agents detained a group of men illegally. You know, you can if you are outside a set distance from a border, you can tell a Customs and Border Patrol agent to fuck right off. No jurisdiction. But when the question was put to a supervisor of the Border Patrol, his answer, I don't know if it was a he or a she, their answer was, well, we have a lot of agents here and nobody really has much to do. That's the damnedest excuse for fascist behavior I think I've ever heard. Well, you know, we're fascists because we're bored. And the two women have had to leave their homes in that town in Montana because they fear for their continued safety. But as to Agent O'Neill, I guess he's still got a job. But you find out some damned interesting things when cases like this come to light. They found out, for instance, the ACLU did, about a private Facebook group called I'm 1015. You know, you can look up the 10 code. I don't know what it means. Evidence, the ACLU in their release said, evidence uncovered in the suit also revealed that O'Neill was a member of the now defunct I'm 1015 Facebook group, where Customs and Border Patrol agents joked about the deaths of migrants. Well, how about that? That's right up there with gambling on which worker in your meat processing plant's going to die of COVID. Yeah, they joked about migrants dying. They talked about
throwing burritos at members of Congress who happened to be from the Latinx community and had the temerity to visit a detention facility in Texas. Also on that Facebook group, they posted a, well, call it obscene or perhaps pornographic drawing of who? Because, you know, they hate her above all others. U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez performing oral sex on a detained migrant. Your tax dollars at work. And those are your tax dollars that are going to pay rightly Ms. Suda and Ms. Hernandez. And there's not a damn thing in here that says that Agent O'Neill isn't still Agent O'Neill. And as far as I can tell, it's probably still the policy of the Customs and Border Patrol to harass young women speaking Spanish because we have a lot of agents here and nobody really has much to do. Mother McCree. It will be the work of a generation to correct these horrors. Yeah. So, hey, let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Bob.
Thanks for your patience, man. I just had to get through those.
Thanks for your patience. Did you vote yet? Have you been in Georgia to vote?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, it's getting colder. If it weren't for the fact that Georgia's more on fire than even this state, and we're on fire, moving might not be a bad idea. But I don't think you could qualify for the election moving down there now. Maybe Steve from Georgia Stan knows something about that.
Yeah, well, all right, this is not a tangent, but since you brought it up, you know, I remember not that long ago when you would remark, well, you know, we only have a couple cases here, but it's coming. We know it's coming. Remember that?
Yeah, I do. It's here.
So.
Oh, and it's here with a vengeance. And, oh, yeah, Steve tells me it won't work, man. Okay, well, we got that. Yeah, well, we'll have to be supportive from afar. But here in West Virginia, you know, states that are responsibly trying to do something to slow the spread, you know, I revere and honor them, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. Mostly it's Democrats. But God almighty, I ran across a statistic because yesterday in his weekly or in his daily press conference, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, Bat Plum had a conniption. I'm real worried about Monroe County, West Virginia. Now, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I going to do anything, but I'm real worried. Because I got so goddamn many comorbidities, if I get this thing, I'm done. I mean, they saved Ben Carson, and they saved Donald Trump, but I don't think they can save my white ass. No, I'm kidding. He didn't say that. But I'm worried, he said. I'm worried. Because in Mineral County, West Virginia, a county with which I'm familiar, it's up in the eastern panhandle of the state, Todd. Not too far from the general D.C. metro area. In Mineral County, West Virginia, there are 10 times as many COVID cases as Harvard recommends
as necessitating stay-at-home orders and shutdowns and lockdowns. 10 times as many cases.
That's a hell of a stat. Damn.
And Jim Justice is doing nothing. And our pill-pushing attorney general, the former opioid lobbyist, Patty Morrissey, is doing worse. Because he's out there, this is the head lawyer of the state, and he's out there barking and grunting about how making people wear masks is violating their freedom.
Wait a minute. I have to, can you please revisit what you just said about Mineral County, please?
Which part? In the Eastern Panhandle, not far from the greater D.C. metro area?
Well, that's bad enough, because that means it touches a lot of areas.
You can cross if I'm not mistaken in my geography, you can cross from Mineral County, West Virginia, into Cumberland, Maryland.
Right. Yep. Right. It's down there in that tip. That's that funny. It's just, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so that, and then it's narrow. It's very narrow. That area is narrow. West Virginia,
yeah,
right?
In fact, what you do, you head west on I-68 out of Morgantown, and you actually cross into Maryland, and then you jump off the highway in Maryland and drive back into West Virginia, and that puts you in Mineral County.
So that means people have to stop and get gas with the locals and all that, you know. So grinding down, you know, zooming in 10 times. That means that they should not let anyone, unless it's a necessity, like a trucker with food, in and out. That's done.
It should be full on quarantine.
I mean, what else do you need to know? It's malfeasance. I didn't even call you talking about that's crazy shit though. You talking about? See, oh no, that's crazy.
And see, make West Virginia great. Big old Governor Jim Justice is saying, well, we might need to take some pinpoint action in the counties that have a lot of COVID. Might.
I bet your pink ass ain't going over there, are you?
Oh no. No, Jim Justice's bulk will not trundle anywhere near Mineral County.
My God, what else? That's insane. Okay, well, anyway, I didn't expect to hear that. That's insane. I said insane 5 times. Literally, that's when you put up the damn barricade, like Operation Sunrise in Philadelphia when the drugs got real bad. They were like, you can't come in this neighborhood unless you have an ID saying you live here. Because that's it. It's too much. Oh, man.
And you know, Jim Justice still has this notion that he can ask the maggot hillbillies to pretty please be careful and not be going over to have family Thanksgivings and stuff, and that somehow we'll take him to heart. We depend This is a direct quote. We depend on you to be able to make these decisions. You see, our people are smart in West Virginia. And Trump's got a big brain. Might as well have added that, too, for as accurate as it is.
Oh, well, he's related to our governor. They're first cousins.
Most likely. Sounds like.
Exactly. They went to the same school. The school of nonsense. You know, right. They're ridiculous. I'm going to try to calm down. That's frightening. Ten times the recommended amount that you should have. But because this thing just explodes exponentially. Literally, that means that whole county's on fire. Everyone in that. You may as well assume now, a thinking person can assume everyone in that county is infected, who will be.
Well,
infected.
See, this goes back to what Paul from Parts Unknown was talking about last night when he said we are about to reach a point at which 1 in 5 people may carry the disease and spread it.
Well, yes. I heard you say that. I heard that. And I'm glad that he, you know, I'm glad that he's offering his wisdom. Because I don't know. But see, this is the thing. The folks who listen, we already know. Or the folks who have the knowledge, we already know. But what is going to hurt us is this just about 40% of our population that doesn't know or doesn't care or firmly, see, this is the other part, firmly believe in maybe it's okay to call the herd and fully believe in herd immunity. And no matter what you say to them, that herd immunity does not apply to this disease. This is a new disease. And let me throw this other layer, because this has been bothering me. And this is old news, but it's just the fact that we had to talk about it. You know, the wearing of masks, that was settled over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Why are we are in a position now where we have to debate, is water wet?
Pretty much. And this is another one of those failures to transmit transgenerational wisdom. I don't know how it happened, but as with so many other things, it happened.
Wait, it jumped like two generations. It's not fun. That's all I can do with that. It's so sad. But see, they're going to hurt us in that. They're going to dread, no matter what happens, even with the vaccine. We're going to have to maintain this mask thing for the foreseeable future. So just get used to it. And while I brought that up, let me say this. I was so fortunate to find, I wasn't even looking for it. I found, like, you know how ladies use this lip balm that has like a roller ball, like an underarm deodorant, old time.
Yeah, some of the, yeah, yeah.
Okay, found one with tea tree oil. And it's only two ingredients. And the first ingredient is tea tree, which is called Melaleuca, which is a magical, it is like literally a magical potion. It's natural, but it's magical. That's why it's called Melaleuca. Because there's only one Melaleuca. And that Melaleuca brand ain't no joke. If you see somebody selling Melaleuca, it's expensive, but it works. But Melaleuca and almond oil. But because we have to wear these masks, you know, you roll it on the outside of your mask where your nose is, and it opens up your sinuses, and, you know, and of course it's antibacterial.
Oh, wait, so you're not even talking about chapped lips at this point. You're talking about, okay.
On the outside of the mask.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
After you've disinfected the mask.
Of course. Yeah, that's the other thing. People, please don't clean. You know, really, you need like maybe three masks a day. They need to be clean. Just get as many as you can so you can wash them and make sure they're thoroughly dry. Because everyone,
I spray the little bastards with 75% grain alcohol.
Well, you can't go wrong with that. You can't go wrong with that. And I'll say this, the guy who cleans for us, who works for the city, we have a can of that industrial alcohol we can mix up. I mix the sprayer up because I spray everything down. I don't care about cleaning. I don't care if I'm a black person in there, I'm cleaning. I have to be there. I don't give a fuck. You know, you can say what you want. But they know I'm not like Stephen Fetcher. Because when I go in there, I say, hey, y'all give me some grease. They hate that shit.
They hate that shit.
They're nice folks. They're nice folks, but they're only going to endure so much. But, you know, I let them know, I ain't no Stephen Fetcher. If you don't like it, fire me. If you don't, you know, fuck. I don't have to be here. I mean, I do and I don't, but I don't give a fuck. That's not why. Anyway, yeah, that's some dangerous shit. Oh, your governor's dangerous. My governor's dangerous. These people are dangerous. Now, you know, when you were talking about the pill pusher family, did you in fact say that they had directed somehow they were directing people who were prone to be addicts to a certain place.
Go ahead.
Maybe I misunderstood that, because that just doesn't, that's just too crazy.
Like, I don't, you know, in 2020, I don't think there's any such thing as too crazy. I mean, this is the year of COVID-19, the murder hornet, vast toxic clouds blowing across the Atlantic from the Sahara. I mean, pick one.
Yeah, it doesn't look good, does it?
I'm not inspired.
Well, I'm glad you finally used the P word about the orange one, because.
Kenneth mentioned it, and I think we've been saying that for quite a while, but, you know, nobody also in their right mind thinks he's okay.
Well, but they're late. They're so fucking late. We wouldn't have had to deal with this. And once again, and this is another basket, this is another indication, another piece of evidence as to why we no longer need, and the electoral college is no longer useful, because that's one of their functions, is to be a safety valve, you see.
Do you realize that the entire concept of battleground states and swing states goes away if we get rid of the electoral college?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing. I mean,
it's got to go.
Build a house, it's got to go. You cannot expect a house to stand when it's built on a fucked up foundation. Weather happens, erosion. So when you build it on slavery, on free labor, you know it's not. I mean, come on, they had to know that wasn't going. They knew that wasn't going to last. You can't appease these fuckers. They tried to appease these people, and they gave them too much. I mean, what do you think was going to happen? I mean, I don't even understand, as wise as they were, they had to understand that was going to be a massive voting block at that point. Because they're going to protect what makes them money. We're talking about, they made themselves some of the wealthiest people on the planet. On the planet.
Yeah.
Period. You know, so, right. So to say, you know, and, of course, constitutional amendments are, oh, this is good. Okay, so this is going to segue into modern times now. You know, so we see how this progressed, and now we're dealing with what we're dealing with because it's been a tainted system. This part of the system, this artery carrying the blood of the union is polluted. Corroded, it's diseased. It's full of pathogens, and it keeps passing these pathogens on, and we have to get rid of it. And all this nonsense will go away. And if people keep spouting these silly arguments, well, then they wouldn't have to campaign here, and then the cities would do this, and cities would do that. Well, you know what? Too bad. You don't want it. These people are just unhappy if they don't have their way all the time, every time.
Well, they're so scared and so paranoid that they realize that unless they have absolute power, they cannot continue to wield absolute control from their minority position over the majority of the citizens of this country. They are white and they are scared to damn death.
So now you're making me think that Citizens United was passed as a bulwark.
Hell yes,
a wall, because they could see. Because remember, that was passed when people are still chattering about the interstate compact, which, you know, the Supreme Court has. I mean, it's funny. There are ways around that now legally where they can prevent us from doing that. and it's problematic. And I warned, I mean, look how close, I warned you. Remember how close they tried with fiddling with the electoral delegations from the states. See, what they were trying to do is not unconstitutional. It's unsavory, and it's unethical, but it's not unconstitutional.
Oh, no, the court said so in Bush v. Gore.
Right. See, which is another reason we have to pay attention to these state houses that we have been neglecting all these years. It's important that we regain these state houses, or at least make a showing. You know, let them know we're around. Because this minority rule is not working. And but people are so turned off. But, you know, and I was only half joking when I was saying, you know, before, I don't know if we're qualified collectively to vote. Because that's the way it used to be. We didn't vote.
Well, look at the number, Todd, of stupid people who think that their freedom is being infringed by simply trying to keep from getting the disease and keep from spreading it to others. And just a couple of minutes ago, our buddy Trey in Kentucky, Stan, sent me a little synopsis of a Supreme Court case called Jacobson versus Massachusetts, which deals with the issue of public health orders by the Supreme Court, no less. This is one of those rare cases where the Supreme Court got it right. Justice John Marshall Harlan delivered the decision for a 7-2 majority that the Massachusetts law did not violate the 14th Amendment. The court held that, quote, in every well-ordered society charged with the duty of conserving the safety of its members, the rights of the individual in respect of his liberty may at times, under the pressure of great dangers, be subjected to such restraint, to be enforced by reasonable regulations, as the safety of the general public may demand. Real liberty for all could not exist under the operation of a principle which recognizes the right of each individual person to use his own, whether in respect of his person or his property, regardless of the injury that may be done to others. That's settled law. That's what, when you're having your cup of coffee in law school, they call black letter law.
That's what I thought. I mean, and beyond the U.S., it's a pandemic.
In the U.S., it's a pandemic.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the numbers I remember when we freaked out when the deaths were still under 100. I remember when we went, holy shit, 50,000? Really? And now we've crossed a quarter of a million dead? I mean, West Virginia doesn't have a state. The state of West Virginia doesn't have a city with a quarter of a million people in it.
No, that's for sure.
That's a sixth of the population of this state, thereabouts. Are there 250,000? Well, I mean, think about it. There are states that only have one member of the House of Representatives because they don't have enough population to get them two. That's the entire population of the state, the number of dead from COVID right now.
Okay, but this is what you're fighting against. Between 30% and to 40% of this population will say, well, only 1% of the people who get it are going to die. So what's the problem? Get over it. It's just like a flu, and most people get it, and they get over it. The president got it. He got over it. Move on. You're making a big deal about it. That's what they'll say. Because, you know, they maybe went to high school and maybe that was it, or maybe they went to community college and that was it, or maybe they didn't do anything, or maybe they're just stupid. But see, that's a very simplistic way of looking at this, but that's the way a lot of people look at this situation. And they're missing, like a lot of life, the action is in the gray area. What happens in between? Okay, fine. 1 to 2% die. But what happens if you don't die? What happens if you have to go to the hospital for 2 or 3 weeks? You lose your job. Your family loses their house. When you get out of the hospital, you have bills, medical bills. You got no place to live. If you have a car, you're living in the car, then what? That's one scenario. And just, you know, use your imagination. See, this and the strain on the hospitals, our medical system. And I'm only saying this because, as you know, that was great. I was so glad you did what you did last night when you were talking about people with their relatives. Because, you know, America's a growing place. We have growing pains right now. And now you have a lot of people who have mixed families in terms of ethnicity and maybe who they love, you know, in terms of gender and being gay and all that kind of stuff. And it's not a big deal to a lot of us, but to some people it's a big deal. It bothers them. They really get upset.
They sit around thinking about it all the time, as has been remarked on this program, many, many occasions. The people who... The homophobes and the bigots spend more time thinking about how gay people have sex than gay people think about how gay people have sex.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, and I think it probably tells us that, I don't know. You know, there are certain statistics as to, you know, the percentage of people in America who are gay, the people who are in a percentage of people in America who are trans, the percentage of people in America who are QQQIA, et cetera. And I think every one of those statistics is probably artificially low because it fails to take into account the people who call themselves straight and Christian, who spend all of their time just wishing they could.
Isn't that funny? It, you know, right. Well, but you see, that's part of, well, that's a whole different topic, because, you know, that the Venn diagram would indicate that a lot of those folks.
There's just probably a whole bunch of latency here in Merca.
Well, I mean, It's different. It's complicated. Because folks, I don't know. It's not complicated, but people should just be honest. It's like, nobody's going to hate you. All right, so, you know, you did that. Or you are that. Let me be more focused. What bothers me, like, when I hear people say, well, that person is gay, you know. You make all these comments. I'm like, well, yeah, but that's my neighbor, and, you know, we don't have no problem. I mean, I don't even think about it. And I'm like, but he's gay. I'm like, well, what do you think is going to happen? Are you gay? Am I gay? I'm not gay. So what's going to happen?
Right, and you know, there's seldom, if ever, any call out for the people who, when marriage equality became the law of the land in the Obergefell decision, Rick Santorum still has a paid gig, a very nice paid gig on CNN, when the guy actually said out loud that gay people being able to enjoy the same marital rights as straight people would result in men marrying their dogs. And the guy's got a paid gig and has for years on CNN.
Well, have you looked
How's
at
Rick, that work?
Rick Santorum? Look at Rick Santorum.
I'd rather not.
Come on. He is a programmable humanoid. Now, you have to remember, they're Philadelphia Weekly. They're the ones, right.
Because the blah people.
Right. I mean, this guy's got a history. All right, he is just I don't know what something happened to him. He doesn't think he just has a program. He has a program. He's like a computer. He's you know, automaton, and he just follows that program. I'm telling you, man, I've been watching this guy since we've seen. But he's very predictable because he has a program. Oh my God! So look, the shit you've been talking about is crazy. Now, I don't know. Did you see Morning Joe this morning?
I didn't catch all of it. I actually slept in a little bit. Agnes and I stayed up late watching The Mandalorian.
I hadn't seen that yet, but I love the name.
The ooing and cooing at the little baby Yoda, I thought Agnes was going to spontaneously combust with pure baby adoration. It really is. It's a good show.
I had to check that out. Let's see what other people were talking about.
And in the Star Wars universe, I reached a conclusion last night. The Jawas are intergalactic hillbillies. Because I don't want to give anything away, but there they are, parting out the Mandalorian spaceship. You know, got it up on blocks in the front yard. Got it up on blocks in the front desert.
Oh, my God.
Let me do something here. Let me bring Georgia in on the stress line, and we'll see how that works out. Are you there, Georgia?
Yes, I'm here.
Yay! Welcome.
Yay! How you doing?
Doing all right.
Yeah, long time no see or no talk to you.
Indeed.
I spoke to you once before on your show about 4 years ago. After the 2016 election, and I was sad, and I said a lot of things. And so I thought I'd give you a call since I can breathe and smile again. Now that our national nightmare is nearly over.
Or at least the first part of it, and then the work begins.
Yeah, the work begins. And Todd was talking about, was that Todd?
Yeah, that's Todd. Todd's still with us.
Okay, yeah, Morning Joe. And I wanted to say something about Morning Joe, and Todd, what I was going to say is about when Joe is trying to convince us that we should still, I don't know, try to reach out to these Trump people. He was quoting Abraham Lincoln and saying, malice towards none. Some people are just cruel and they just get off on it. I don't know what they want us to do, particularly when what they want is at the expense of other people or at the expense of their humanity. And I just happened to catch Bill Maher this weekend too, and he's talking about, you know, we have to reach out to them and don't give up. It's like a cult. You just got to reach them. But, I mean, everything doesn't have a happy ending. And you can't make a happy ending.
A lot of truth in that. And, you know, you talk about what do they want. I'm reminded, you remember that forgettable movie, Independence Day? Bill Pulliam and Will Smith and...
I know the movie. But I'm like a movie snob, so I never saw it. But yeah, I know.
Well, there's a scene where the president of the United States goes out to the secret facility and confronts the alien and says, "What do you want from us?" Uh-huh. And the alien says, "Die." Well, that's the maggots. They'd be very happy living in a country without us pesky liberals, because it's their way or the highway.
And well, everybody always trusts these people. I don't get it. Go ahead.
Georgia, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead. Can you hear me? I hear you.
I hear you. I just wanted to make sure everyone can hear everybody. So, because, you know, I was trying to, you know, see where you were coming from. So, yeah, this morning, I have a different take, maybe. I don't think maybe Scarborough was trying to appease or say we should appease, but maybe just kind of move forward. Like, we have to come together because, you know, it's tricky. If we start to persecute the folks, even though they were absolutely, you know, engaged in terrible activities that were antithetical to how our government should be, I mean, if we start to lock them up, then the same thing is going to happen. And then we will be what they accused us of being, even though it's warranted. Just like he called us, you know, he said, well, not us, but. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like you're speaking like in terms of like Joe Biden and the Justice Department in the future. I just was talking about just regular Joes and Janes like on the street. I'm not looking to like persecute them, but you know, there's been great deference given to these people who do nothing but try to undermine the government and progress, basically. And I think that it's very frustrating. It's like after the elections, all you see on television is Trump voters. Like, these people have this outsized importance, and everyone else is supposed to just, like, kind of cower in a corner. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be at the table. Of course they should be. And I don't think Joe Biden should even get involved in prosecution.
Precisely. Georgia, it's not the business of the president to tell the Department of Justice who to prosecute and who not to. There were a lot of hissies had when he said that he wasn't going to get involved in the decisions of who should and shouldn't be prosecuted after he becomes president. But in point
of
fact, that was the right answer.
Yes, I think so.
Because if we don't like Trump running around hollering, lock her up or lock him up or lock them up or, you know, talking about who should have the hell beat out of them or get their head bounced off the cruiser getting put into the squad car, then we don't want to. If we didn't like that, we don't want Joe Biden doing it either. And you know, the knee-jerk response was so swift and so predictably wrong that I just sat there holding my little head in my hands going, oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to uncover when they get in there, but he should be hands off and let the Justice Department get back to what they're doing. But we have to be clear that we have a party that, I mean, I remember Karl Rove is like, he dreamed of like a one-party rule. And Democrats like totally being in the minority, just an opposition party.
Yeah, the term he used back then was permanent Republican majority.
Yes, yes. And these aims don't go anywhere. I mean, if we don't do something, or Republicans are out of control, and too much deference in the media is given. Mitch McConnell is absolutely evil. Won't sit at the table for anything, and you know, pretending. I don't even understand it. I don't get it. I mean, I don't understand it. Otherwise, I'm going to say something that I shouldn't say, but it's just absolutely maddening.
Well, it is, sure. And the idea of deference. I'll come to you next, Todd. But the idea of deference, as James in Illinois puts it. All the way back to the 3/5 rule deference. And then, you know, here's the question for anybody who says that we've got to be nice to the maggots. When we say, okay, we got to get the virus under control and we need a national mask mandate and everybody has to wear a mask, and they respond by pointing guns at our heads. or opening their mouths and coughing in our direction and sticking out their disgusting tobacco crumb covered tongues. Now, how? And this is just, I think this is a fair question. How do you reach consensus with that? How do you reach, because the only consensus you can reach with a gun to your head is to agree with the person who has the gun to your head. And if we do that, we die. Even without them pulling the trigger, because their goal is to kill as many, they're bioterrorists. They are. I keep saying it, and it's not, and I'm not saying it hyperbolically. I mean it. They are trying to work public policy through threats and intimidation involving germ warfare. And I'm not talking about some lab in China. I'm talking about here in the United States of America, where they want to make the disease spread. Am I over the top in any of that?
You know, I Bob, I just get so frustrated. I don't know. You know, we've been in this position before, and I'm going to give the founders. I heard what Todd was saying about the founders, but the thing is, it's hard to start anything. So you get a country started to move it forward. You know, it's up to us and those who come after us to try to get it to a better place. But I don't know. I'm in Georgia, so I'm going to vote. And, you know, we've got our ground game. We're hoping we can pull it out and get these two senators elected. But, you know, Mitch McConnell is just such a pain. And you know he's going to be obtuse and just recalcitrant as ever if they get the majority.
Well, if the Republicans have the majority, simple and ugly answer is nothing happens. It's their way or the highway. And it's not even their way so much, Georgia, as it is Mitch McConnell's way. I mean, he's a real live, no kidding, autocratic tyrant. He is running this country from the office of the Senate Majority Leader.
Yes, he is.
He's the evil genius.
I mean, right now, people are hurting to death right now, and he won't lift a finger. All this summer, he's been MIA, Mnuchin's doing whatever for Trump. Trump doesn't want to meet with Nancy. She hurt his feelings. You know, this is no way to run a country. I don't understand how people think you can run a country this way. I don't know. But some people are okay with it. I mean, is it because,
They're okay with it because for a generation now, they have had poison poured into their ears from the likes of Limbaugh and Hannity. And the whole point of all of that was to defeat any civic education that people might have gotten and sell them right-wing propaganda to replace it. I mean, it's all over you in South Carolina, Todd. I'm sure it's all over in Georgia. But, I mean, you know, look, questions. Consider. Let's just, and I'm not saying it should be. I don't want to be misunderstood. But let's give them their fondest wish. Let's give them their fondest wishes. Everybody in the country owns a gun, okay? Let's give them another one. Nobody can get an abortion ever at all. How does that then? I mean, because remember, these are the same people that said all the heterosexual marriages would fall apart if the gay people got to get married. Well, the opposite of that is, okay, we're going to eliminate all the abortions and everybody's going to have a gun and you can take it anywhere you want to. Now, you've got your fondest dreams. How's that going to put a single person to work? How's that going to address wage inequality? How's that going to make certain that people can go to the doctor when they're sick? There are real public policy things that we have to do that are utterly unaddressed by the fetish objects that constitute what passes for modern Republican politics. Modern Republican politics has nothing to do with governance and everything in the world to do with fetishes. Sorry, I don't mean to preach, but...
No, but, I mean, you're right. Well, you know what it is? It's like, tell me who to hate. tell me what to hate right now, and I'll hate them.
Yes.
Well, Georgia, here's the other thing. When they lose, you see, they don't want to compromise. It's their way or nothing else. Look at the posture now. They're not willing to accept, many of them, enough of them that say it out loud, which makes you think, how is the tip of the iceberg, the new presidency. See, and these are the same people that are convinced that the media, there's some left-wing media, when in fact, that is absolutely the opposite. You can go anywhere in this country and listen. You turn on the AM radio, all you hear, you get Fox News for free, even online. It's the only news station in America where you can go on YouTube. There's always a live feed for Fox News. Try and do that with YouTube and MSNBC. You'll be successful for like 10 minutes, and then they shut it down. Okay, right-wing media is available free and easy, like air, in this country. So every time they say that, and it's really, you know, I have hesitated to say this, but their whole existence thrives on projection. I mean, from their toenails to things they haven't even thought about yet. Everything they say about us is what they're doing. Everything. It used to be a few things, but now it's everything. And even with the whole presidency, look, everything. I won't have time to golf.
Yeah. Everything is politicized. You know, you know, I tell people, you can't politicize public health. I mean, which Trump did, of course, which he knew what he was doing. And I try to tell people, Trump is not cute and cuddly. He's an evil man. He had all that information. He knew what he was doing. And evil. That's not kind. That's not, you know, somebody. People give him a pass because they're not sure if he's stupid or what. But no, he knows. Okay. He's the most person in the world with more information. Yeah,
go ahead. I have to say this. This was like really foremost, one of the foremost things on my mind when Bob brought up the P word, because there's a difference between a sociopath and a psychopath. It's when you you inflict harm on people, like intentionally. That's when you cross the line. You know, from a sociopath to a psychopath. And let's look at this, you know, clinically. Take your emotions out of it. We all remember, let's say, the Boston Strangler, Zodiac Killer, Son of Sam, you know, news clippings that we've seen through our lives. When you had these serial killers who are, in fact, psychopaths, they see it as a game. They send notes to the authorities about what they're going to do as it, you know, like a riddle. And this is exactly the behaviors that this, you know, who we're talking about. He has engaged in it. He's on his way out. But you see, it's not over because he has a following. But we have to understand this. This is how sick he is. This is why he tells the snake story. This is why he will tell you.
You know, he's a snake. He's talking about himself when he does the snake story.
You know, we're in for some shit. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You're fine. I mean, when he was telling that story to the supporters at a rally about the snake, I knew at the time he was talking about himself. He's the snake, and he hates these people, you know, but he needs them for their votes and whatever. He is just like a calculating person. And I tell people he knows how not to get in trouble himself. He knows how to make Michael Cohen take the fall, or this guy take the fall, or that guy take the fall. And he's always just like an arm's length away from whatever the trouble is. You know, he has someone else.
A stable genius.
But it's always getting done. He's always asking people to commit crimes. Like, he just meet you. Like the Border Patrol people. Well, you know, he was asking them to do something illegal. And their supervisor wants Trump left told them, don't do that, you know, that's illegal. But, I mean, you're just asking people always to commit crimes for you. And I can see how...
No, he had to steal a butt from the pig. It was awful.
It's insanity. And people, we've been in, like, I would say kind of like a boiler room, and we just don't know it. We've been, like, assaulted every day for 4 years, longer than that, if you count the campaign. I don't know. I mean, I know I can sleep a little bit, but I know that I've been, I mean, I feel like I've been in an abusive relationship. And, you know, you just can't trust. You just feel like, because there's so many people who enable this man. And you got to realize,
well,
he got as far
God.
As...
Wait a minute. That's exactly... Because wait a minute. Let me jump on you. When you talked about Morning Joe, right? Okay. The reason I brought it up is because this morning... The host was talking about how the media had given them avenues, but they never implicated themselves. The only time they implicated themselves is when Joe talked about being implicated in the death of his I don't know, somebody who was closely associated with him, his secretary or something like that. And he actually, like, you're not supposed to talk about that, but he brought it up this morning. I don't know why, but then remember all that free time that they gave him on that show, but they didn't present it that well. That's the reason I brought it up. I'm just making an observation. I'm not judging them because that's, you know, their business to make money, and that's what they do. And I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to jump on you, but it just seemed like that was a good...
No, but you just, in mentioning, Todd, the need to make money, just had a note from Arnold in PA who says, I completely agree with Todd. I second that Fox is free because it's supposed to be operating at a loss. And it comes on a lot of cell phones.
Wow.
And so while ordinarily the job is to make money, If you're an ideologue who is trying to reshape a country like the United States, then Rupert Murdoch does not care how much money he loses at all, because you know in the end the way our tax structure is, losing all that money means nothing to him.
I want to say this. Because I never thought I would, but, you know, at the beginning of Trump's term, and an Australian journalist was talking about America's retreat and how we were going into isolationism. And he said something like, I think we'll miss her when she's gone. This was like maybe the first couple of months. And I must say that with all of our flaws this country has, I don't like what steps into the void. And we've lived to see that something else, even though we're flawed and we may be war hungry, you know, to think of the Putins, some other powers stepping into the void, at least we know in the country we push back. And I was so proud of this country and the people in it during the George Floyd protest this summer. And people all over the world saw it. And it motivated a lot of people to think and deconstruct their own societies. There's a lot we love and like about the country. I'm going to speak for myself. And there's much we want to change. But when we step aside and we became as small as we've been, we haven't done anything for any other country unless Trump gets something out of it. It's a very small way to live. All these people getting educated in this country, and you have to lick one man's ass to be able to to work in the field that you want. We only got a small taste of it. But imagine if he could have just put a sycophant in every position. That means nothing is real anymore. Nothing is true. Nothing is based on any evidence. And it's frightening. It's very frightening. And we, you know, hopefully, I mean, if it gets back to that point, and I know we all can be susceptible to these type of temptations, but Republicans are committed to it. And we have to tell everyone and never forget that we have a party here. All kinds of atrocities can be committed against Americans, and they don't give a damn. No one will come and help you. They don't give a fuck. They'll continue to live. They eat the best food. They're getting their six-figure salary. As long as they got to lick this person's butt, they don't care. No one's coming to help you. And for me, that's very frightening.
It is.
You guys there?
No, it is. And I think we were both just kind of blown away by what you said. You're absolutely right. It is frightening. What did the industrialist Gould say so long ago? I can get half the working class to kill the other half of the working class. Well, he wasn't talking about what a great about how great he was at persuading people. He was talking about what he could do with his money.
Yeah.
Oh, and if you don't mind, let me interrupt just long enough. About 19 minutes left in the program, and I hate bringing this stuff up, but I don't want a lovely challenge like what Joey and Giraffe put on the table at the beginning of the program to go unmet. So if you've just wandered in lately, if we can raise 50 more bucks, then Joey will send 50 bucks each to Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff to try to help save the Senate and help try to thereby save America. And all that has to happen is 50 more dollars have to come in to meet that challenge. So hopefully that'll happen in the next 18 minutes. Got a couple of emails here from Jude. In M. Scott Peck's book, People of the Lie, to a greater degree, all mentally healthy individuals submit themselves to the demands of their own conscience. Not so with the evil, however. In the conflict between their guilt and their will, it is the guilt that must go and the will that must win. When humans evolved from the apes, however, they largely evolved out from under such instinctual controls and hence into free will. This evolution leaves humans in the position of being either totally willful or having to seek new ways of self-control through submission to higher principles. And therein resides the crux of the problem, says Jude. I align with Peck. And maybe evil has not consumed some, but they are aligned willfully. There's, you know,
that is articulate.
Yeah, isn't that something? At the end of the day, I mean, we are still, you know, we're still animals. And while we have evolved a different form of consciousness, the animal that we are still has animalistic tendencies.
Well, there's two things. I was so silent, and you were silent because of what Georgia was saying.
Yeah.
And but because of the cadence of Georgia's speech, I was, you know, I was just looking at a picture in my mind. And you see, Georgia, I guess maybe this is what you were saying and what you're not saying. This is my interpretation. He already got started on that trek of putting sycophants and the evil people. If you weren't aligned with his mindset, you weren't invited, you know, you weren't staying around. Look at Pompeo, look at Barr. Even the cracker of crackerdom, He couldn't hang. He had to go. He had to go back to Alabama. Because it wasn't enough. Right. And he's the one who had that gleam in his eye. He was like, I'm going to get rid of these. I'm going to do child separation. Remember, that's a war crime. You can't do that. There's so much.
Yes.
Well, it's a war crime if somebody besides the United States does it.
But you see, Nikki Haley pulled us out conveniently right before that shit happened. I'm going to get me started on that. But and I don't want to get off of my tangent because I will do it. But you see, like what you were saying, George, you're right. If he had another 4 years, we would have no country. He'd hodl out. Foggy Bottom was hollered out. There was nothing left.
Yeah, again, the list of things that have to be done. How do you restore functionality to a deliberately broken State Department?
Wait a minute. That right there. People who don't understand, that's just a term. Oh, the State Department. Do you know what it takes to build a relationship? It's like growing an oak tree. The oak tree's gone, and you're like, I need this 200-year-old oak tree right here with the roots and everything, but we don't have it. But I need it now. Well, what am I supposed to do? You cannot just produce a 200-year-old oak tree with the roots and the fruit and the canopy. You can't do it. This current president has done more to this country in 4 years than anyone in history.
And of course we all, and with that in mind, we get to ask the eternal question. It's always fun to haul out one's Latin. Cui bono? To whom?
Who benefited? I'll tell you who goddamn benefited. No, I won't.
I wonder if you're thinking of the same person I'm thinking of. I mean, one of the most bizarre, and this has been 4 years of bizarre stories. But I woke up this morning to one of the bizarrest. We're pulling out of the Clear Skies Treaty.
I know, right?
And we, the United States of America, have two, count them, two airplanes that we use to do our flyovers to verify treaty adherence. Well, Nitwit Nero has pulled us out of the Clear Skies Treaty and ordered that the two aircraft be destroyed. So,
do you think they're going to destroy them?
I don't know. But you know, there's two instances: a hollowed out State Department, the diplomatic arm of the United States of America, and these treaty enforcement aircraft. Cui bono, Todd? Cui bono?
Lay it out.
Huggable, snuggleable, cuddleable. Pooty. Who says he's not ready to acknowledge that Joe Biden has been elected president yet? Well. Fuck you, Vlad.
Hey, check this out.
We've been through the ringer. Go ahead.
Right before the election, Trump kept saying in a lot of places, this is the days before the election, within the last week of the election. Oh, you guys, if I don't win, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back. Now, he said that in a number of his rallies the week prior to the election. Now, that's just another layer on the
poop-a-doop. Jesus. And that comes back to the same question I've been asking. How much damage can he do between November 3rd and January 20th? It's like something I tweeted earlier today. Hey, we're only 57 days away from the beginning of 2021. Nobody said, hey, Bob, no, it's more than 57 days. It's less than 57 days till January 1st. Uh-uh. 2021 does not begin until January 20th, 2021. It's going to be 2020 all the way till the minute that Joe Biden's hand comes off the Bible.
I have a question. I apologize when I'm too, maybe too aggressive, but I get excited. That's not a question. But the question, this is the question. And I'm being serious here. Now, we already know almost everyone in the immediate sphere of the White House is either infected with COVID or less than 3 degrees of separation from COVID. Now, would you want to move into a house that is like filled with COVID?
No.
Like the furniture is shitty, like his shit fucking shitty butt is like all over the furniture and shit. Let me tell you something about Trump now. Now that we know, I know this motherfucker now. I'm serious. I've been studying him for a while. He is the type of asshole that will wipe his butt and take the toilet paper and wipe it on the light switch before he leaves that house.
Ah, Jesus. Now, well, there went dinner in the Pacific Standard Time Zone, and I think we just ruined the midnight snack.
You didn't say no. I see that's the first. You didn't say no. You didn't say no.
I agree. I think he's going to leave some Easter eggs, as they say.
Yeah, that was cowbell.
Listen, do you even know Bob is working at the Sheraton off 85 in Charleston? He's having the cowbell seminar. He's gonna teach people how to really work the cowbell because he can speak with the cowbell. He can do the cowbell. He can do the cow with dysentery. It's like ka-dung, ka-dung. Never mind.
Yeah, no. That's exactly it. Oh God.
No. I mean, seriously. Like he should just go home, like go to Mar-a-Lago for Thanksgiving and not come back. Because what he's doing, all he's doing is firing people.
Oh, and by the way, in case you didn't know, Bill Pepe the Frog Barred of Prosecution is going on, Dave in South Carolina, Stan, just let me know about this. He's going on an execution spree. No shit. It comes from a story on Slate. William Barr's bloodthirsty lame duck execution spree. Lori Garrett reporting that Trump will carry out executions in the days leading up to the inauguration, with the last one scheduled for 5 days before Biden takes office. This bloodthirsty decision is another grotesque way Trump and his Justice Department are defying the norms for modern transitions.
They can't help themselves.
No, you can't medicate this away.
I'm exasperated. I've been on a light news diet lately. Since the election is over, I catch a snippet here and I read a little bit here and there, but not like obsessive.
Yeah, a little information vacation can be good for one's mental health from time to time.
Definitely. And this man has exhausted me. My family, they call, they want to talk about politics and Trump, and I just can't talk about him.
Well, wait. All right, do they want to dog cuss him, or do they want to tell you how awesome, how star-spangled awesome he is?
No, they're not in this corner, but I just can't. A person who's inundated in your life, day after day, you can't have one day without him making news, tweeting something, being on TV. I just can't. I mean, I got to the point during the summer, I was just like, I can't deal with this. I mean, I have my phone, but I try not to. I read other stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I felt assaulted. I mean, the man doesn't even do the job. He doesn't even pretend.
No, I get it. This goes to show you how little it takes to make me happy. Our buddy Michael in Madison posted something on Facebook the other day. It was over the weekend. And when I saw it, I jumped for joy. Hi, Joy. Hulu has brought back Animaniacs. Not reruns from 1998, but an entirely new two-season slate of Wacko Yakko and the Warner sister Dot and Pinky and the Brain. And I saw that.
Oh, wow.
And I got so freaking happy. I immediately picked up my phone and texted my daughter and said, did you know the Animaniacs are back? And I get back in all caps, yes! And, you know, 72 exclamation points. And I watched it, and the stress just fell off of me. It was a beautiful thing. And I sat there watching Animaniacs Saturday and just trying to, you know, just actively engaged in not losing my shit for a few minutes.
Wow.
So good. So good. And while people are on TV, like, complaining. You know, people are on TV, like, we haven't heard from the president in 3 days. I was like, thank God. I don't need to hear from him. I mean, let the man do whatever, sulk or whatever he needs to do in quiet.
Exactly.
Man, this has been so great. I know you're getting towards the end of the show, but Bob, I wanted to touch bases with you and just say, you know, this is my second time on the show, and it's great. I keep listening, and I donate here and there, and you've gotten a lot of people through a hard 4 years, man.
Well, and you know, it won't be long till its coffee breaks over back on your heads, too. I'm so glad you called in, Georgia. This little conversation between you and me and Todd has been magic. And by the way, I have happy news to report. Joey's challenge has been met. And so that leaves us, and then some. So, one of the people kicking in was Jug of Punch, who said, you know, my profound apologies to Giraffery. And Jude from Women Standing jumped in, and Roberto jumped in. And our buddy Earther jumped in. And so the way it's going to play out is we've got all but $32 of this evening taken care of. And so that makes tomorrow not quite so harrowing. Thank you. Thank you, one and all. And thank you, Georgia. Don't be such a stranger. Jump in anytime.
I will.
And, you know, I'm proud to know you're doing the work down in Georgia. It's like Jerry Reed sang in Eastbound and Down, long way to go and a short time to get there. So, you know, now is the time for all good people to come to the aid of their country in Georgia. And, you know, this has been something that has felt somewhat like a civil war these last 4 years. And just as Sherman marching across Georgia and into South Carolina finally convinced the South that maybe they weren't going to, you know, that they really didn't have a shot. It can be Georgia again that returns this nation to its senses.
God, I hope so. We're going to try.
Exactly.
I just read a record number of absentee ballots have been requested. Yes, Todd.
I just didn't want you to hang up. I just wanted to say it was lovely hearing you, and I hope you call more in the future. I think you have a lot to offer.
Thanks, Todd. I appreciate it. It was a great conversation, and I will. I'll call again.
I hope so. And so y'all both have a good evening. It's time for me to wrap up and get out of here and upload the program for the podcast. Thank you both so much. We covered a bunch of ground, as is always the case. And you know the usual drill. For God's sake, stay safe. There's a bunch of crazy ass maggots out there.
Yes. And hello to the Horn family. Have a good evening.
You too. Todd, take care. Later, my friend. And so here we are at the end of the program. Thanks to everybody who got us to where we are. Thank you so very much. Darlene in Connecticut says, thoroughly enjoying Georgia and Todd's input. And Biden and Harris know what they're up against. After the GSA finally ascertained Biden as president-elect, their statement about the transition process finally getting underway ended with the following. In the days ahead, transition officials will begin meeting with federal officials to discuss the pandemic response, have a full accounting of our national security interests, and gain complete understanding of the Trump administration's efforts to hollow out government agencies. Emphasis added, gain complete understanding of the Trump administration's efforts to hollow out government agencies. That, I think, Darlene says, is why Biden selected John Kerry to be the climate change envoy, to have a seat at every table and discussion. Kerry has a depth of institutional knowledge at the State Department and elsewhere, and has been maintaining international relationships during the past 4 years to the absolute frustration and apoplectic anger of Trump. Fascinating. I have to trust they know what they're doing. And I don't mean that in a deprecating way. I think they do. Maybe they more know what they're doing than other people who were running. It's a distinct possibility. Albert pointing out, because I mentioned, you know, the way these conversations go. Animaniacs proves that Steven Spielberg has a deranged sense of humor. Pinky in the Brain proves it. Oh, I'm a big Pinky in the Brain fan. I am. Well, thank you. Thank you, Shorty in L.A. says, great show. I thought it was, too. Earther says, bring Georgia back, times four. Well, that's up to Georgia. So that'll close things out. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your subscriptions via PayPal, Patreon, your a la carte contributions. Some of you do all three at once, or all three in any given month. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, no matter what manner, in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you. To our news ninjas, thank you. Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The best place to listen to Malloy first run is at headon.live. Thanks to Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Billions and billions of hours served. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Please take care of yourself. Limit your contact with people who aren't members of your family. If you have to go out, you know the drill. Wear your gloves, wear your mask, wash your hands frequently, carry your hand sanitizer with you at all times. Maintain your social distance among people who are masked at least 10 feet. Avoid people who aren't masked to the greatest extent possible. Try not to spend more than a few minutes in any store you have to go into. And if somebody, if some former pill pusher comes towards you saying, masks are taking away our freedom, avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later, y'all.